वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 22, called The Elements of Material Creation, Text Number 40. Janma tu atmataya pumsa sarva bhavena bhurida vishaya स्वीकृतिं प्राहुर् यथा स्वप्ना मनोरथा जन्मत्वात्मतया पुंसा सर्वभावेन भूरिदा विषया स्वीकृतिं प्राहुर् यथा स्वप्न मनोरथा जन्मत्वात्मतया पुंसा सर्वभावेन भूरिदा विषय स्वीकृतिं प्राहु यथा स्वप्न मनोरथा जन्मत्वात्मतया पुंसा सर्वभावेन भूरिदा विषय स्वीकृतिं प्राहुर् यथा स्वप्न मनोरथा जन्मत्वात्मतया पुंसा सर्वभावेन भूरिदा विषय स्वीकृतिं प्राहुर् यथा स्वप्न मनोरथा जन्मा बर्थ तू एंड आत्मतया बाय आइडेंटिफिकेशन विथ ओनसेल्फ पुंसा ऑफ अ पर्सन सर्वभावेन कंप्लीटली भूरिदा O most charitable Uddhava, Vishaya of the body, Svikritim, the acceptance, Prahu is called, Yatha, just as, Swapna, a dream, Manaratha, or a mental fantasy. Translation and purport. O most charitable Uddhava, what is called birth is simply a person's total identification with a new body. One accepts the new body just as one completely accepts the experience of a dream or a fantasy as reality. Please repeat. O most charitable Uddhava, what is called birth is simply a person's total identification with a new body. One accepts the new body just as one completely accepts the experience of a dream or a fantasy as reality. Purport. Identification with one's material body surpasses the mere affection and attachment one feels for the bodies of relatives or friends. The word sarvabhavena here shows that one totally accepts the material body to be oneself, just as one completely accepts the experience of a dream as real. Mere imagination without practical action is called a daydream. The mental concoction that occurs in a sleeping state is called a dream. Our identification with our own body and our blind acceptance of bodily relationships as permanent constitute a prolonged form of dreaming or fantasy in which one imagines oneself to be separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The term birth, therefore, does not refer to the generation of a new entity, but to the blind acceptance of the spirit by the spirit soul of a new material body. ओम ज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुरोन्मीलितं येन जन्मतात्मतया पुंसा सर्वभावेन भूरिदा विषया स्वीकृतिं प्राहुर्यथा स्वप्न मनोरथा. So, in this chapter, just a few verses ago, Uddhava has asked a very pertinent question to Lord Krishna. And that question is, why should we think that there's a difference between nature, or prakriti, and the living entity, the jiva, or the atma, or the kshetrajna, the knower? When in fact it appears that they're actually the same thing. So this is a question that, although placed 5,000 years ago, is as relevant as it was back then. In that, this question of why one should posit the existence of any reality beyond matter, when all we see around us is matter, is the fundamental problem in the modern outlook. Prabhupada often spoke of this. He spoke very heavily against it as well in the series of conversations called Life Comes from Life. Prabhupada, he makes this point of how we have to be able to distinguish the existence of a separate reality, a transcendent reality within the existence of matter. But this doubt that he expressed is not a new one. It's actually quite ancient. The Vedanta Sutras, they begin with this fundamental statement, which we all know, Athato Brahma Jignyasa, that now let us therefore inquire into the absolute truth, Brahman. So then the question arises, well, what is this absolute truth? What is it? And therefore the next sutra immediately gives the definition of this Brahman, this absolute truth. What is it we want to inquire into? Janma jasya yataha. That from which everything comes. He from which everything is born, janma, adi, and is maintained and ultimately is destroyed. Let us inquire into that. Janma jasya yataha. Then one might ask the question, well, okay, if that's what we want to inquire into, the source of everything, how do we come to know about that thing? And the Vedanta Sutras immediately say, Shastra Yonitvat, that this knowledge of ultimate reality, from which everything comes, comes through Shastra, or through Shabda, through the process of hearing from the right source. And then one might express the doubt, well, okay, this is what we need to inquire into, is that from which everything comes. But could that just not be, could not everything be coming from matter? Right? Just like the Big Bang Theory. Right? Everything has its source in the material world. Couldn't matter or the universe itself be the source of this creation? Matter producing matter. And that, the Vedanta Sutras in the fifth sutra, they immediately say, no. Ikshateer na shabdam. The source of this whole material world is not prakriti, ashabdam. It's not prakriti. It's not nature. It's not matter. Ikshateer. Why? Because whatever the source is of this creation has to be conscious or living. And matter is dead. So, you see that right off the bat, this most fundamental of scriptures, Vedanta Sutra, which presents the very basic truths of spiritual life, beginning with that most basic theorem, Athato Brahma Jigyasa, by the fifth line, it's already dealing with this doubt, or this argument, this contradiction. What if matter just came from matter? How do we know that there's anything spiritual that exists? Anything beyond this material realm. So there was a famous philosopher in the West. His name was David Hume. He was one of the empiricists. He believed in that the only reality that existed was what you could perceive through your senses. David Hume, John Barclay and John Locke, or George Barclay, I forget. These three were the famous British empiricists. David Hume has this very interesting reflection or thought on meditation, he calls it, on the soul, in which he tries this thought experiment. He tries to look for something that might be the soul. He says, if everyone says that there's a soul, and the soul exists, and there's something non-material within me, then let me try to find it with the best means that I have. Let me try to look for it. Physically, obviously, he's ruled that out. You can't look at it physically because any number of doctors have investigated every inch of the body and you don't find anything called the soul. So he says, let me try in a more subtle way. He realizes it's something subtle. And so he looks within him, and everywhere he looks, all he sees are things like thoughts and feelings and ideas and desires and motivations. He says, I find bundles of thoughts in my inside. But I don't find anything called a soul. There's nothing called a soul. I have an idea of a soul, but that's just an idea. It's again another idea, another thought. The reality of the soul I don't see anywhere. How would we respond to such an argument? How would we respond to such a doubt that Hume has expressed? He's looking within. Why doesn't he see the soul? Yes.
From my experience as a child brought up in a religious tradition, the soul is that consciousness, that part of the human world.
Right. Right, but he would say that's just another thought or idea you have. You have the idea of God within you. Why doesn't he see the soul when he does this little experiment? He looks everywhere, yes.
He's not equipped with the right technique to find it out. So he is just using his subtle material thoughts to find something which is not material.
Yes, that's true, but that's kind of a circular argument in that if you're positing the existence of a non-material reality in order to prove the existence of a non-material reality. No, I mean, you're saying here, you're assuming that there is a soul and which is non-material, and therefore, because he's looking using material things, therefore he's not finding the soul. But his point is, if all I have to go on to use is the tools I have, right? So if I can't find the soul using that, then it's all, I mean, you can't make me create, posit the existence of something that I can't perceive. That's his point. Right? Yes?
Could you ask him, what is the source of his thoughts?
Yeah. What is the source of his thoughts? So, very good. We're getting there. I mean, the basic question we can ask to start off with, all of these are very good points. To start off with, the first thing we can ask him is, sure, you cannot see the soul. You can't find it there. But that's because the soul...
Well, devotees have no problem. We don't answer us for both. And you sort of want to reduce the world.
Yes, of course. But then trying to convince non-devotees, that's the big problem, right? So the point is, he cannot see the soul within, because the soul is the seer. Right? He cannot observe the soul because the soul is the observer. So in other words, suppose, you know, I were to say, you know, everyone has always told me that I have eyes. This is a theory that people have about me, that Radhika Raman has eyes. But I spent the last hour before greeting of the deities looking everywhere around my body, and I don't find eyes anywhere. Where are they? I don't, they're not on my hands, not on my legs. And I looked everywhere. I don't see any eyes. Therefore, eyes don't exist. Why? What's the problem there? It's the same problem Hume was facing. Sure, you don't see the eyes. That's because the eyes are the seer, not the seen. Right? They are the seer. That's why you cannot see the eyes. It's just like that proverb of the 10 foolish men who crossed the river, and when they get to the other side, then they say, you know, we just crossed a dangerous river, we should make sure we're all here. And so the one says, okay, I'll count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. We're missing one person. There are 10 of us. Right? And so the guy says, hey, you don't know how to count. Let me count. So he counts. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. You're right. We're missing one person. And on the 10 foolish people, all they count, and they only come up with 9. And then finally some other guy shows up from later. He says, what's the panic about? Why are you guys freaking out? So there's only 9 of us. He said that. You're forgetting to count yourselves, right? He counts, you're all here. You're forgetting to count yourself. So this is the stupidity of the empirical method. That he's counting. He's cataloging thoughts, feelings, desires, emotions, ideas, reasoning. But he forgets to count himself in the process. Right? Who's doing this process? Who's doing the counting? Right? Who's the counter here? This basic point was understood by another famous Western philosopher. His name was Descartes, René Descartes. He was a French philosopher. And he got to at least this point of understanding the reality of the soul. Right? He did this similar sort of meditation. And he came to the conclusion, it's very famous, cogito ergo sum. I think, therefore I am. You've heard this before? I think, therefore I am. I must exist because I'm thinking. So he questions everything. Well, maybe you don't exist, maybe he doesn't exist, maybe the table doesn't exist, maybe the chairs don't exist, maybe the microphone, maybe it's all my imagination. But if it's my imagination, then I must be here. Right? There must be some observer there. I think, therefore I am. This much he got to. From that point, he tried to prove the existence of God. And that was, he felt that he accomplished it, but it was, that was a little more shaky. But at least for this, the proving the existence of some spiritual transcendent reality, Brahman, Athato Brahmachikyasa, that he could get to. Just like Prabhupada says, anyone with a little bit of common sense will get this point, the difference between a living body and a dead body. Living body is, at one moment, someone's breathing, the heart is beating, the lungs are breathing, everything is going on, and the next moment, nothing's going on. And what's changed from one second to another? Okay, after 2-3 hours a day, the body decomposes. But in that one moment, what happened? What left? What changed? Anyone with a little bit of common sense understands, okay, there must be some reality which exists beyond this world, which is the conscious perceiver. That's the point Krishna is making here. Right? He's arguing, you have to start with a distinction between nature and spirit. Another very nice argument that Srila Jiva Goswami gives in this connection for the existence of the spirit soul. He says we can know that not the spirit soul, the super soul. Jiva Goswami takes it one more step. He starts this basic point of the difference between the body and the soul. This is the same argument. Okay, this is the argument that we hear many, many times. Prabhupada makes in practically every lecture. He begins with this point. You're not this body. Right? Understand this basic reality. You see, if you understand this basic reality, you accept the existence of a non-material element, just like Prabhupada wrote that book, Easy Journey to Other Planets, in which he argues for the existence of the anti-material particle, like the non-material particle. If you accept that much, that little point, that there is something that's non-material, then your case is lost. I mean, then it's a slippery slope, and you have to ultimately accept the existence of God. It's kind of too late. You can't maintain atheism. As soon as you get someone to agree to the existence of some reality, some particle that is non-material in nature, then it's too late. Then you have to accept the existence of the eternality of the soul, you have to accept the existence of the super soul, and ultimately of God. And Jiva Goswami, he takes it to that next step. He says, okay, if there is the spirit soul, if we are eternally existing, where there's a conscious material, conscious spiritual element within the body, then clearly this spiritual element, or us, the living entity, we have to experience things, we have to undergo things in life over which we have no control, which we have no desire to experience. In other words, we have to suffer. I'm the spirit soul, okay, I'm an independent being, that much we've established. But clearly, there's something beyond us which is controlling us, because I have to suffer this cold, and I didn't do anything to want it, to desire it. I have no control over that. If I had my way, I would not have the cold at all. Or so many other things that we're controlled by. Feelings of hunger, so for example, and so many other things, right? The experience of karma in general. Therefore, he says, there must be some reality which is orchestrating all of this, which is causing it to happen, which is setting it up. In other words, there has to be something beyond the spirit soul. Now, you can call it super soul, you can call it paramatma, antayami, you can call it God, whatever you want. That's not the point. But there has to be something that is beyond us. Otherwise, we would be the supreme beings on this planet. Right? Human beings are at the top of the food chain. We'd be the controllers. But clearly we're not. We're forced to experience things we don't want to. So there's someone else pulling the strings here. And it can't be matter, because we've already shown that I'm superior to matter. Right? I'm a conscious element. Matter is dead. So therefore there has to be a higher reality, a super soul in existence. And in fact, what's interesting is the same philosopher, a French philosopher, Descartes, he came to this conclusion. After he concluded, cogito ergo sum, I think therefore I am, then the next question that arose is, okay, I've proven my own existence, but what if nothing else exists? I exist, I know, because I'm conscious. But what if you're just a figment of my imagination, and I just invented you, and this whole temple room is in my head? Maybe I'm hallucinating the whole thing. Maybe it's a dream, right? The purport here is talking about the dream. This entire reality is just a dream. We agree it's a dream. But his problem was, what if it's all a dream in my head? I've thought up this whole thing. He said, I could be a brain in the vat. I could be a brain inside a vat, inside of a container, plugged up to some machine and feeling all these sensations. Could it not be? The whole reality could be that, a virtual reality. But he quickly concludes that even if that is the case, suppose you assume that is the case, still there has to be one other person, at least, besides me. Suppose everything is my imagination, okay. But there has to be one other person besides me. Why? Yeah. Who set up the whole hallucination? Right? Who set up the whole farce? Where is this whole idea coming from? Who's plugged us in? Right? Who put us in the vat? It has to be some other reality. So, the point is, one can come to the borders of Paramatma realization simply by the use of logic. Prabhupada said that the philosopher Socrates, he was Brahman realized. Of all, if you read this book, what's it called? All the conversations about the philosophers Prabhupada had. Dialectical Spiritualism. This big, thick book. It's Prabhupada's conversations with Shyamasundara Prabhu and a couple other devotees, in which they present the theories of various philosophers, Western philosophers, and Prabhupada responds to them from a Krishna conscious perspective. And of all these philosophers, the one he liked the most was Socrates. Who's the first? Right? They say in Western philosophy that all of philosophy after Socrates and Plato, all of philosophy is footnotes to Plato or Socrates. They're almost the same person. Plato was his close disciple. But Prabhupada said Socrates was Brahman realized. So Brahman realization you can come through the form of logic, through the use of logic, pure logic, because it's a logical thing. Right? And even to the borders of Paramatma realization. You can come simply by using the intelligence. This is the platform of jnana can give us that. Krishna talks about the jnani in Bhagavad Gita. It's the four, one of the four types of pious people, right? Jana sukriti norjana artojit nyasurartati jnani cha bharadarshava. They can come to the point of Brahman, even to the point of Paramatma. But coming to the point of Bhagavan realization, the idea of a personal God who has a relationship with us, that is not provable by logic alone. It can be shown to be reasonable by logic, but it can't be proven to be a fact through logic. That requires the permission, the willingness, the mercy of the Lord Himself. The Upanishads say, Nayam Atma Pravachanena Labhya Namedhaya Nabahuna Shutena. Says, you cannot know the Supreme Lord, Pravachanena Labhya, by giving long speeches, Bahuna Shutena, by great learning or education, not by a lot of intelligence, namedhaya. How can you know him? Tam vivrnute tanum swam. He, when he chooses to reveal himself, vivrnute, to uncover himself in front of you, then you can know him. By his mercy. There's that verse, how does it go? Yasya deve para bhakti yatha deve tatha guru. Tasyaite katita hyartha prakashante mahatmanaha. That when someone has unflinching faith in the Lord, and just as he does in the Lord, he also has in the spiritual master. That person, tasyaite katita hyartha prakashante mahatmana. All the truths about the scriptures and reality are revealed within the heart. So, up to a certain extent, here Krishna is making an argument for the existence of the spirit soul. So up to a certain extent, the existence of the spirit soul, the existence of the super soul, you can get through logic. Right? So often, when we're dealing, for example, with educated or sophisticated or different types of cultured audiences, and we have to make a presentation of Krishna consciousness and so on, or even not that, just a general audience, you always see Prabhupada, he begins, in practically 90% of his lectures, he begins with this point, you're not the material body. That's something anyone can grasp, even a child can grasp. Then we can get them to the point of accepting some higher reality beyond us, the super soul. We can get that. We should try to do that. But then to get them to actually understand, accept Krishna, that audience, then we need to give them some prasada or have them engage in some kirtan. The strings of the heart need to be pulled at that point. They need to, their desire to their remembrance of their identity as servants of Krishna, that love which is dormant in the heart, what is it, nitya siddha Krishna prema sadhya kagunai shravanadi shuddha chitte karaya udai. Nitya siddha Krishna prema. In the heart, Krishna, love for Krishna is eternally established. Sadhya kabunai. You don't have to get it from anywhere. But it needs to be awakened. Shravanadi shuddha chitte karaya udai. When the heart is purified, even a little bit, by shravana, kirtan, etc., then karaya udai. It rises within the heart. So then you need the process of hearing, chanting, of associating with devotees, receiving the mercy of a pure devotee, eating Krishna prasad, then that process can help one actually approach Krishna. And you stand in front of Krishna and you say, ah, this is God. Right? That experience, that step, this is God. That doesn't come simply by a logical process. Logic and argument can help because they can provide the foundation, Brahman, Paramatma. But then you need some mercy from the Lord or from the devotees of the Lord. Then you can come to that point. So the fact of the matter is that yes, this is a dream, right? This material world is very much a dream that we live in. It's not a dream we're having alone. It's a coordinated dream, right? We're all having similar dreams. So that it's all very well orchestrated. So we all agree on a few basic things. Right? Prabhuji is wearing red and he's wearing navy blue and he's wearing a mixture of red and black and like that. You know, we agree on some things. My dream is not so different from your dream. But in other ways, it is different. This whole reality, it's described Maya, means a dream reality, right? A dream world. In what ways is this reality similar to a dream? Right? Why does Shastra describe it as a dream? Can anyone compare? Can you give me some similarities, between dreams and between the reality we live in? Why is it called a dream? It's temporary. Okay, so that's a very important characteristic of a dream, is that it starts and it ends. Right? So this our own experience here, everything in this world is temporary. And therefore immediately it's categorized in the category of dreams. Because anything that is not a dream, anything that is truly real, has to be eternal. This is an axiom in our shastras. Sat means eternal. The word for eternality and the word for reality is exactly the same. The word sat means both eternal and real. Okay? So substantial, something of substance. So it's temporary. What other ways is it similar to a dream?
Confusing.
It's confusing. Right? Yeah, one of the things about a dream, you wake up from the dream and you go, now, I was in Sydney, but why was my mother there, even though she's in India, right? It's like things don't quite fit in a dream. Things get confused. The dream starts off and you think I'm seeing such and such person, and then they change into someone else. It's like everything becomes confused. So this material world similarly is a very confusing place. Our reality is all confused. It's all messed up. And we can see this through the cycle of reincarnation. We begin with this reality, I'm such and such person, right? I was born here, I was born like that. And then a few years later, that person is gone, they come out some other reality, right? And was I there? Was I here? Just like the story of Maharaj Chitraketu and his, the little boy. It was Chitraketu, right?
Yeah.
And he had, his little boy came after he died, Narada Muni and Angiras Muni, they brought him back to life. And when he comes back to life, the king says, oh, you're back, my son, you're back. Your mother's here, your father's here. How wonderful. And he's all confused. He goes, what? Which mother? Which father? Are you my frog mother or frog father? Or is it the demigod mother or demigod father? Or which one? Right? It's like a dream. Where was I? And what was going on? And at that point the king realizes, oh, okay, this is what reality is. Right? This is what reality is not. This is unreality. So it's temporary. Right? It's confusing. What else?
One can wake up from it.
Yeah, you can wake up from it. Right? That's the ultimate point. Bewildered. Right. It's confusing, it's bewildering, and you can wake up from it. Someone comes and shakes you, then you come out. Right? Of course, it's not always a very pleasant experience. The person who's dreaming doesn't always want to be woken up. You're in deep sleep and someone comes and shakes you. And, you know, there's this period, this in-between period, when you're not fully asleep and not fully awake, and someone's just, you, if you're dreaming, I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but you set the alarm, while you're dreaming, you're sleeping, and it's a very deep sleep, and you're dreaming, and you're hearing the alarm ring in your dream, and you're looking for it everywhere, trying to turn it off. Or the phone is ringing, and you're thinking, oh, the phone is ringing, and you're looking for, let me pick up the phone, and somehow you can't pick up the phone in the dream, because it's actually outside the dream. But what your mind does is just incorporates it into your dream, it makes it part of that reality, because you don't want to wake up. The subtle body is too comfortable, too absorbed in that dream state. And you may even get irritated at the person or thing which is trying to wake you up. People knock the alarm clock off the bracket. It's angry. It's, I don't want to be woken up. That's kind of the situation we end up being in. Right? We're all, as devotees, we're kind of in this in-between situation. Halfway there, halfway out. So the spiritual master, devotees, they come And they shake us. And they say, Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago. Gora Chandra Bole. Kota Nidra Jao Maya Pishachira Kole. How long are you going to sleep in the lap of the witch called Maya? Kota Nidra Jao Maya Pishachira Kole. Bhajibo Bolia Eshe Shangshara Bhitare. Bhulia Rohire Tumi Abhityara Bhare. Bhajibo Bolia Eshe sang beautiful, beautiful song. Says, you came into this world saying Bhajibo. Bhajibo Bolia Eshe Shangshara Bhitare. Bhulia Rohire Tumi Avidyara bhare bhajibo boliyaise. You came into this world, a samsara bhitare, in this world, samsara, right? Saying what? Bhajibo. Just one word. In Bengali, beautiful word. It's a future tense. I will worship. Krishna, I promise, bhajibo, I'll worship you. Bhajibo. Samsara bhitare. You came into this world. Bhulia rohile tumi avidyara bhare. You've completely forgotten. And you're now avidyara bhare. You're staying in this complete ignorance, in this dream reality. Forgotten everything. And therefore, Gora Chandra bole. What's he saying? He says, Kata nitra jao maya pishachira kole. How long are you going to sleep in the lap of the witch Maya? How long are you going to keep this dream going? Wake up, wake up. And we go, no, no, let me sleep. I'm having a good dream here. Okay, there's some bad moments, but it'll turn better soon. Right? Something nice is about to come, I know it. Let me sleep. He says, Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago. Socrates had a very similar example. This example of the cave, the people in the cave. There's a group of people who are chained inside of a cave. And they're facing the wall of the cave, the inside. And there's light outside, but they cannot see that. All they see on the walls of the cave are the shadows dancing of people outside, their own shadows. And they're completely absorbed in that. Completely involved. Wow, look at that. Oh, someone's doing something here. Did you notice that? And then someone comes from the outside, some very kind person, and says, I'll unshackle you, I'll break your chains, come, let's go. And they go, no, 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 we like this, we're just getting to the best part here. And he says, no, these are just shadows, wait till you see the reality. And no, we don't want to go. And sometimes, then he cuts those chains, and he forcefully drags them outside. And you know what happens when you first come out into the light after staying a long time in the dark? Oh, the eyes are hurting. It's too bright. You're causing me pain. You're actually a very cruel person. Why are you doing this to me? Sometimes the spiritual master, the devotee, when they bring someone to Krishna, we go through this process of anartha nivritti and everything. It can be a very painful process. Think, why are you doing this? My life is so much more comfortable. Non-devotees have it so easy. They don't have to wake up 4:30 in the morning. They don't have to deal with their anarthas. If they get angry with someone, they can just walk away and curse that person. We have to work it out. We have to cooperate. We have to sacrifice so much. We have to do austerities. So much easier it is to be a non-devotee. And that's true. It's just like it's painful to drag that person out of the cave. Their eyes hurt. But it's okay. Just wait a few minutes. Just stay out there for a few minutes. And your eyes will adjust, you'll start seeing. And once you see that reality, right, once you see this reality, then you can't go back. You're hooked. This is why devotees, even after all the sacrifice and all the effort they go through for Krishna, who'd do this kind of work? Waking up 4:30 in the morning and doing all this hard work for Krishna? Even then, they can't give up. They can't give up. Because once you see this reality, then you're hooked. You can't come back. You can't go back into the cave and sit there and watch the shadows. It's just no there. It's just like when color television arrived. Right? What happened to black and white TVs? They disappeared. You can't, even if you go to the market, you say, I'm ready to pay $1,000, give me a black and white TV. You can't find one anywhere anymore. Because once you have the color reality, What were you going to do with the black and white? This is kind of our situation currently. Right? This dream reality. We're all there in the spiritual world. Right? We serve Krishna. It's such a wonderful life. But somehow, it's like, you know, if you're at a very wonderful party, say, lots of nice people, good company, everything's really polished, and everyone's having good conversation, good food and drink. And somewhere in the corner of that party, in a little corner, there's a little black and white TV flickering. And somehow, we've wandered over there, and we become enamored by this television, this black and white TV, these flickering images. And we're just completely absorbed in it. We become so absorbed that we forget that there's this whole wonderful reality around us. Lots of wonderful people and good food and good drink and culture and love. And everything is there. And we're just sitting in this corner of this party, completely absorbed in this black and white TV. That's kind of like with our condition in the material world. This is one little corner of the whole cosmos, of the whole spiritual sky. This one little cloud in the corner. And we've all wandered over somehow. And we're all enamored by it. We're sitting in the corner looking, wow. And someone's kind of shaking us in the back. Thanks for the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. He came, shook us. Said, what are you doing? Wake up, look behind you. Look at everything that's here. You've got a place in this wonderful occasion. You've got something to do. Your friends are here. Your family's here. Get away from this corner. Look at what's around you. Well, that's the role of the spiritual master. That's the role of the devotee. Is pulling us out of that dream reality that we're in. So this is why Krishna is describing it as a dream. He says one accepts a new body just as one completely accepts the experience of a dream or a fantasy as reality. He says this is all it is, our accepting of a new material body, the accepting of a new dream. The only difference is it's a very sophisticated dream. Krishna has arranged it in such a way that it's a coordinated dream. Everyone's dreaming similar things, you can communicate to others. Things are a little better than your average dream. That's all. But otherwise it's the same principle, the same concept. It's temporary, it's flickering, you can wake up out of it, it's confusing in every way. It's just like a dream. And our job is to somehow wake up out of that dream and see the brilliance of the spiritual sky. Come back to Krishna. So I'll stop there. If there's any questions or comments at this point, yes. Yeah, that's a good question. What would you say in that kind of circumstance? This is why Krishna, he says early on in his list of items of knowledge in Bhagavad Gita, he lists janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha dosha anudarshanam, that being able to see the reality of the suffering of birth, disease, old age and death, this is one of the first steps of knowledge. Basically, the person is in ignorance, thinking that this dream reality is actually a very pleasant one, and I can be happy. Material nature has two qualities, avaranatmika and vikshepatmika. Right? With her avaranatmika potency, she covers us, and we start thinking that everything's actually quite nice. Okay, there's a few problems around here and there, but basically I can manage things and things are decent. And we'll solve all the other problems that exist in due course of time. And then there's the other side, vikshepatmika, or the kicking potency. So she covers us so that we think that we can be happy here. But of course, we're not supposed to be happy here. That's the point. So then she kicks us every once in a while, really hard, and we go, we go flying. We're thrown from one place to another. And then that suffering wakes us up. We go, oh my God, this is horrible. This is terrible. There must be something more than this. It's the type of thing that happens, for example, when a loved one dies in one's family. Everyone starts feeling like, this material world is so temporary. I have to focus on spiritual life. There must be a God. Is this it? You know, is this all? But then before we can get serious about spiritual life, she avaranatmika, she covers us again. We go, oh, actually things aren't so bad, right? And this way she covers us and then kicks us and then covers us and then kicks us. This way we can continue suffering for lifetimes and still think that actually things are pretty decent. I can control it. So, in fact, every philosophy of the world, even Buddhist philosophy, for example, which is atheistic and we don't accept, but they begin with this basic point, the point of dukkha or suffering. They say the first step, the Four Noble Truths in Buddhism, the first truth, they say, the first step in spiritual life is you have to realize this material world is suffering. So, sometimes we do encounter persons like that, who just are very satisfied in their material situation. And honestly speaking, there's not a whole lot you can do within them to create the urgency to surrender to Krishna or to pursue spiritual life. In other words, if someone is satisfied or happy in the material world, then sometimes we just need to wait a little bit until the kicks of Maya wake him up into that position. In other words, that there will come a time in life that everyone experiences that kick in a very severe way. We all experience it a little bit here and there. But we all encounter it. Maya always gives a heavy slap. Because this is her job to wake us up, even though it's also her job to keep us in. Right? So, the point is sometimes we have to wait till a person comes to that point, till they get slapped around a little bit more. And realize that this material world is suffering. But the good thing is, you see, because that person has contacted a devotee, they've contacted you, they've heard about Krishna consciousness, maybe they received a book, but at least they got prasad. So that when that time arrives in their life, they'll be ready to go. Right? They'll be ready to say, you know, long time ago I met the Hare Krishnas. And they told me something, I have to go find them. There's so many stories like that. Of people, the first time they encounter, they run away, they cross the street, they avoid it in every possible way. But later on in life, when things are ripe, Maya kicks enough, then they go, you know, I have to look for those people again. And they don't have the address, they don't have the number, they moved to some other place. But when they see things are ready, you know, when Krishna sees this person is ready, then he's there in the heart as the super soul, directing the wanderings of all living entities. And he somehow or other he brings them back, and they find the book in you know, someone's thrown it away or whatever. Something happens, and they come face to face with the devotee again. So the point is, we just have to see what our role is. Sometimes our role is to bring that person actually to Krishna and put their head down and say, now surrender. Right? Others, our role may be simply to give them that connection, right? To give them that doorway to open, and to give them some prasad and a book, so that when that time arrives in their life, and we can be confident that it will, right, then they have Krishna. They have some a lifeline to pull them up. Yeah. Any other questions, comments? Yes, Prabhu.
Why Krishna calls Uddhava Bhurida?
Bhurida. So that's a very nice word. Most charitable or most merciful person. Bhuri, very broad-minded. So this is the characteristic of every pure devotee. Uddhava is a very pure devotee of the Lord. Very advanced. And the characteristic of a pure devotee, actually it flows very nicely with what we were talking about. Because he's someone who's willing to take the risk of going into the cave and cutting people's chains, and willing to take the cursing and the bad language and the the negative response sometimes that this produces. Willing to take the risk of going into the cave yourself, right, even though it's so much nicer outside, and not just let those people sleep, because that's the easier thing to do. It's like they say, let sleeping dogs lie. If someone's sleeping, the easier thing is to let them keep sleeping. Just like sometimes you find at airports, international airports, between long flights, someone will, you know, you'll be jet lagged and they'll be asleep. And so it's easier just to let them sleep. But of course, if someone is kind or merciful, then they'll take the risk of shaking the person and saying, sir, is this your flight? It's about to leave. Right? Why is it a risk? Because it could turn out that it's not their flight and then they get angry at you or whatever, you know. They prefer to sleep than travel. But the point is, someone who's very kind will say, before I board the plane, let me make sure that this person doesn't get left behind, because clearly they're out of sorts right now. So this is why the devotee is called Bhurida, very, very merciful in nature, because they're willing to go where others don't want to go. It's much easier not to do anything about it. You don't want to be involved in the scene of a crime. Right? But a devotee is saying, no, okay, I'll go. I'll take the risk of being blamed. Right? But I have to help this person out. Therefore, the gopis, they also sing, right? Tavakatham ritam tapta jivanam kaviriditam kalmashapaham shavanamangalam shrimadatatam bhuviginantiye bhuridajana. Bhuridajana, same word is used. That those who are glorifying Krishna, telling his glories to everyone, tavakathamitam tapta jivanam, and this Krishna katha is tapta jivanam, it's like life for those who are burning in this fire of existence. They're like giving them water, pouring water on them. Bhuridajana, they're the most merciful in this world, right? They're the most compassionate. Bhakti Charu Maharaj once gave a very beautiful Vyas Puja offering for Srila Prabhupada, in which he used this verse to glorify him. He described how even the gopis are glorifying Srila Prabhupada. This is what Prabhupada did. And he was Bhurida, very, very compassionate, very merciful. And the gopis are glorifying the preachers, right? Some people say preaching is not a very advanced activity. Much better to do bhajan or something. But you look at the most advanced devotees in this world, in the spiritual world, the gopis. No one's better at pleasing Krishna than they are. They are the highest levels of love. They're glorifying the preachers. Bhurida jana. How magnanimous such people are. That they come and they tell people about tava kathamritam. Give people the nectar of your katha, of your pastimes, of hearing about you, which is like life for them. And for us, they're saying. They're even merciful for us. They're welcoming the preachers to themselves.
It was Mpurijan.
Yes, Mpurijan. Yes, exactly. Yes.
So there's reality, there's the reflection, and there's the reflection. So what is the key to reflection?
Okay, say again, from the beginning.
There's reality, and there's the reflection, and then there's the word reflection.
Oh, I see. No. The reflection is the perverted reflection. In other words, every reflection is perverted because it's upside down, you see, and it's always shaky, and it's never clear. So there's no two things. There's the reality, and then there's the perverted reflection, or the reflection.
Okay, because Bhakti Kripura Swami, he was talking about the banyan tree. He was talking about the word reflection, and he said we should not forget that there's also the reflection.
Yes.
And I don't know, he was also saying something about Mahavishnu and his abode, that's kind
of... Oh, I see. Okay, yeah, see, the thing is that the example, the analogy, can be used in many different ways at different contexts. So, the typical way in which we use it is that the spiritual world is the reality and the material world is the reflection, the perverted reflection. But I think there's other ways in which the example is used as well. And I'm not sure exactly the way in which he was using it, but perhaps he was talking about how there's a reality and then there's the sharp or the crystal clear reflection of that reality, which is the super soul or the Purusha avatar, who's present within every universe. Even though there's only one Lord, Supreme Lord, but like a reflection, he's present in every specific reality. Just like the moon is present in every pool or pond of water, even though there's only one moon. Right? And then there's the perverted reflection, which is our reality, the material world here, which is completely disconnected, which we have disconnected even from the super soul, even from the Purusha or the Mahavishnu or Garbhodaka Shai Vishnu, like that. So maybe that was how he was using it.
That if you see things as for your enjoyment,
yeah, well, actually, I mean, then it's reality. It's not just reflection. If you see it separate from Krishna, then this is what Maya means, right? Maya means. Bhagavatam says yatha bhaso yatha tama, right? That maya means that which is abhasa or like a reflection, yatha tama or like a shadow. These are the two examples that Bhagavatam gives in defining what maya is: yatha bhasa yatha tama, either like a reflection or like a shadow. But as and the definition of maya is that reality, that existence which gains its reality from Krishna but yet appears to be separate from Krishna because of our consciousness, right? That which is real because it's connected to Krishna, it's getting its reality from Krishna, but which we separate from Krishna in our consciousness, that's Maya. So as soon as that's a reflection of Hasa, but as soon as you connect that reality to Krishna, then it becomes reality. In other words, then, like Prabhupada said, this microphone is spiritual, right? Because as soon as you connect it with Krishna and you see it as such, so yes, it is a matter of consciousness. But for the pure devotee, everything is spiritual. Right? This whole world is a spiritual world. This is why, even though he appears in the material world, he's not entangled by it. He's not controlled by it. So that's called the platform being Jivan Mukta, is when you connect everything to Krishna, then that becomes the platform of complete spiritual reality, actually. It becomes Shuddha Sattva, pure reality. So, yeah. So I think those are two kind of separate applications of the reality, the reflection example. One is in terms of Maya being the reflection. It's just a two-step process. It means reality and reflection, which is always going to be upside down. And then this may be this second sense of the ultimate supreme reality reflected in specific other, and that's a pure reflection. Anything else? Oh, I think we're out of time. Okay. Thank you all very much for your attention and for giving me this opportunity. Srila Prabhupada ki jaya.